Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the country. We just finished Cleveland, Ohio. Peter Ray had James Donaldson on. And now this is the, well, it could be my biased pick of the shows, you know, being from Pittsburgh. It's the 412, the All Access Pittsburgh podcast, hosted by my good friends. Chris Fletcher running the hot seat today while David Fanoli's at the Penguin game. So yours truly, Mark Mancini, running the board here, 347-205-9631. You can catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, let me lay the red carpet down for him, put the podium in its place, hand the mic, more him, less of me. Chris, first of all, how are you? Second of all, how can people get a hold of you? And third of all, with David over there at the PBG Arena and a great guest coming in, boy, I'll tell you, this is going to be a barn burner in the Berg tonight.
Hey, Mark, you're doing great tonight. I'm kind of bummed for Dave. Dave is at, as you said, at the Penguin game. The Penguins down 3-1 to the Rangers right now as we speak. So hopefully the luck of the Fanoli will help them. You can reach us at our Facebook page, the 412, and we always will post who our upcoming guests are. Occasionally we'll have some quizzes and some things to keep everybody going. You can find me on Facebook at Chris Fletcher and also at Twitter, CE Fletcher 2121. And it's kind of a fun time of year. I'm excited about it. You know, we're 9 days away from the start of baseball season. That's one of the reasons I was really excited about our guest is coming up later tonight. Peter Golenbach, who's written a number of great baseball books. He's got a new one out that he's going to be jumping on when he gets here to talk about a little bit. But for the Pirates, well, a little bit of news today that I guess I was a little bit disappointed, but I understand. The Pirates announced that their top prospect, shortstop O'Neill Cruz, has been optioned to AAA Indianapolis. That's where we'll be starting the 2022 regular season. You know, it was kind of a strange decision for a number of reasons. One, you know, the Pirates really need that kind of roster improvement right now. Cruz, well, he's 23 years of age, so he's already spent 5 years and 405 games in the minors. So that's a little bit strange, but what I think is going to happen, Mark, is that they're looking to get him some experience at other positions besides shortstop. He's a little big, little lanky to be playing shortstop. He really has the look to me of an outfielder. He definitely was mashing the ball in spring training. He did pretty well with a call-up last year at the end of the year. He went 3-for-9, a home run in a couple of games. They brought him up to sort of showcase him. So I think it's only going to be a matter of time before he's up and joining the big club. So I'm excited about that. Also excited for the fact that I think that this Pirate team will start to show a little bit of improvement. I think they've got some young talent. It's just going to be a matter of working it in. I was a little disappointed that they didn't make a contract offer to try to walk up Ryan Reynolds. But, you know, that's sort of the Pirate way, I guess. So we'll have to see what happens. The other big news for me in baseball was I was excited to see that Albert Pujols has signed a one-year contract with the Cardinals. He says that he is going to be retiring after the season. Right now he's sitting at, I believe, 679 home runs for his career. So he just needs 21 to be the fourth to hit 700, and given that he's playing the Pirates a number of times this season, and how well he's hit against them, he might get that probably within 5 games of playing the Pirates. Who knows? But it's going to be an exciting season to see him, and he'll get that farewell tour a star of his magnitude really should be getting. Also, you know, the other thing that's exciting about this time of year is, you know, we have March Madness, and this surprised me. I would have thought, given their pedigrees, that Duke and North Carolina would have met before in an NCAA basketball playoff game, and that hasn't been the case. So that's going to be a fascinating watch to see. So I'm excited about that. And, of course, you know, this time of year we talk about the draft. We get ready to see who the Steelers will pick. You know, how many mock drafts have been out there already? Probably about 50 or 60, I don't know. But, you know, with the signing of Mitch Trubisky, we'll see if they do go ahead and make a move at quarterback. So there's a lot going on at this time of year. Get you ready. Thinking back to when I was a kid and in this time of year, the thing that to me that always marked the beginning of baseball season was the arrival of the Street and Smith guide on the newsstand. So, you know, the thing about baseball, and that's one of the things we'll talk about with our guest tonight, is it's just such a generational game. You know, you remember different things about growing up and watching and listening and keeping score, all of those things. And I'm just fearful that we're going to be losing a whole generation of baseball fans who are not experiencing that because of some of the issues that are happening with the game. We did get baseball peace, which is good. And on the bad side of it, though, I know Dave was cursing about this, and I don't know what your feelings are about it, Mark, but you know, we're going to go back to the ghost runner to start the extra inning games now. So
yeah, that's,
I guess
that's going to be definitely crazy. Exactly. I mean, sorry to, you know, jump in on that, but I'm totally against that as we wait for Peter Golenbach to come in. Man, Rob Manfred is just changing the rules here big time, and I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I'm totally against that that ghost runner.
Yeah, I don't like it. I mean, I guess I understand the rationale. They're saying with the shortened spring training, they're trying to take a little bit of the load off the players. Maybe I'll buy that, but it's just not something that I really care for. The shift, I think, is an interesting conversation to have, too. Yeah, that the shift has been around for years. I mean, they did it to Ted Williams. They did it to Willie Stargell. They did it, I always remember they did it to Boog Powell, one of my favorites. But, you know, here's the thing. Just adjust. You don't have to get into that.
No, totally agree with that. And, you know, that seems to be the problem. I mean, you know, with the rule changes and everything, there's, you know, the DH now in the National League, I know, you know, another guy's going to earn a lot of money, so the pitcher doesn't have to really bat, and it could be an advantage with the bases loaded and trying to get that sure out with a pitcher. It's amazing, man. It really is, but that's just keeping Albert Pujols around in St. Louis for his farewell tour. And, you know, I couldn't help but you talk about when you brought that up with Albert Pujols. You know, if he's sitting on .699, you know, the Cardinals end the season in Pittsburgh. That could get really interested selling the joint out, depending on where these teams are out the last game of the year. The Cardinals could be winning the division, we know that, but the Pirates could be, you know, somewhat in this contention for a playoff with the added team. But how interested would that be, seeing a series in Pittsburgh in October with Albert Pujols striving to hit .700?
Well, you know, for me, Mark, it reminds me of one of my great disappointments in baseball. I was living in California at the time, and the Royals were coming into town, and I thought about going to see them play against the Angels. George Brett was four hits away from 3,000. I thought, well, maybe I'll go the next night because I don't think that he's going to get four in this game. And lo and behold, he did. I ended up going to the game afterwards, and I missed it.
Wow. Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Yeah.
I mean, when you talk about the greats, he's got to be up there. I mean, just especially the start of his career, he was just such an amazing player. And just I'm so glad to see that he gets to finish his career in St. Louis. That's how it should be.
Well, not only that, he's been a pirate killer, too. You know, when you look at
there's
him,
a lot
I mean,
of teams that he's killed, so they shouldn't feel all that special about it. But you're right. I mean, he has, and that's why I said, if he's 21 away from 700, he would only be the fourth player to hit 700 home runs. Think about that. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, you saw all the years with the Angels. I think he was an influence with the Dodgers. Were you surprised? I wasn't surprised for him to go back to St. Louis on the one-year deal, do kind of like a farewell tour. I saw the farewell tour with Mariano Rivera when the Yankees kind of came through Dodger Stadium on that one. So I think that was only fitting. I was kind of surprised the Cardinals didn't bring him, you know, back when the Angels released him last year and the Dodgers picked him up. But this makes sense in more ways than one to have him, you know, go out with the Cardinals. Any thoughts to that?
Well, I think it's great. And I think that the one thing I will say about St. Louis, they are the best fans in baseball. I don't think there's any question about that. They're the most knowledgeable. They've had a great product that they've had in front of them for years. You know, I obviously grew up a Pirate fan, but had to love those Cardinals teams of the 60s and 70s. I was fortunate enough to be in the stadium when Bob Gibson hurled a no-hitter against the Pirates, beat them 11-0 in 1971. It's one of my great baseball memories. And I always thought that, you know, if I needed a starting pitcher to win a game that my life depended on it, Bob Gibson was going to be my man. He was just that kind of player. And throughout the years, they've just had such a successful franchise. They do it the right way. I do enjoy rivalry with my friends from St. Louis. Danny Russell, a good friend of the show, is always sending stuff back and forth to me and Dave. But I'm going to be excited. I will definitely see at least one or two of those Pujols games as he rumbles through Pittsburgh this year.
Well, not only that, and you know, as we're talking about the Pirates too, I mean, this year is going to be an interesting year, I think, in more ways than one, because not only are the Pirates the second year, you know, with the fans in the stands now, and you know they've opened it up, so the mask mandates could be limited out there. I know they're out in Los Angeles; they are to a certain extent. But when you look at this Pirate team and Derek Shelton running it again, I think his fingerprints are on something with Ben Sherrington here to really build a winner here. I mean, we know it, and I know, you know, David's talked about it. We're a couple years out, but the progress has been there. And when you looked at last year, I took notes on some of these games. You know, we battled the Padres tough. We battled the Braves tough. These are two teams, the Braves, the World Series champs. The Padres kind of faltered down the stretch. We're trying to get rid of an 0-14 skid with the Dodgers, but we took the season series with the Giants, who were tough. We handled our own with the Cardinals in more ways than one. So when you looked at it, you know, and even, you know, the second straight year playing the American League Central gave us some light with the White Sox and some of that those teams. Now we get the American League East. So when you look at these teams, yeah, the Yankees are on a downtrodden year pretty much. But with the Yankees coming to town and then the Red Sox coming to town, that's going to be a big boon in Pittsburgh for a lot of out-of-towners for money coming into the city. What's your take on the last couple of years with the pandemic and now coming out of it, and now the American League East coming through Pittsburgh?
Well, I think it's going to be great for the fans. The thing that I like about the Pirates this year, and I'm going to go back to last year, even though they were completely overmatched talent-wise, I didn't think that they ever quit on Derek Shelton. And I thought that they played hard. And like you said, they were not pushovers for a lot of the good teams. That they played them hard. They were in a lot of games. It's just that they just didn't have the talent. You didn't have, you know, from your power positions of first and third, you just didn't have the production that you needed to have. You had a suspect pitching staff. So I think that Ben Sherrington, you know, he's built winners. He was there in Boston. He saw how it was done. His fingerprints were on that, as you said. I think that they're making all the right moves. Their farm system is getting much better. I think there's some interesting position battles happening. I think Cole Tucker may actually turn out to be something this year. We'll see. That experiment is certainly coming to a point where it's got to, one way or another, they've got to know something. I mentioned at the very top of the show that I was expecting that they would do something with Brian Reynolds to try to lock him up, definitely their best player. But, that didn't happen. So, we'll see what happens. But I think that they're going to be more competitive than they were last year. I think that there's going to be some growing pains, definitely. There's no question about that. It's a young team. But David and I both maintain that of all the Pittsburgh teams, they're probably the closest to winning a championship. Even though this is a really good Penguins team, which, by the way, they're down only one now, so they're making their way back. But I think that the Pirates, they're going to make a little bit of noise this year. I think next year and the year after is going to be the big years, but we're going to see some improvement this year. You mentioned that I'm not a big believer in Cincinnati. They let a lot of their roster go. Chicago, I'm not a big believer in. So it's going to be Milwaukee and St. Louis. And, St. Louis always in the hunt, it seems.
Well, and not only that, when you look at the extra wild card now, six from each, league, you can't help to feel giddy that the Pirates can pretty much make a move here because, when you look at the positive things here, I mean, you got the Mets over on the East, and the Phillies got the bats, but they don't have the pitching. And then we look at our division, you got the Cardinals that are going to be right there. They're there year in and year out, it seems like, since the 80s. But when you look at Milwaukee, you don't really know what you're getting with Milwaukee quite yet. And if Milwaukee's in there, okay. And then you got the Padres and the Dodgers over on the other side. So they're, the six could kind of jockey back and forth. Do the Dodgers have enough depth to get in there and win, another division? They didn't get the division last year. It snapped their streak, I think, of eight. All I hear is Dave Roberts has won, three pennants in one World Series. I don't really count the World Series he won because it was only like 60 games. They haven't won a World Series, playing 162 in three decades. So, and plus the fact over the years, the Dodgers have lost a lot of guys. When you start to add up the guys that ate up innings and the Maedas and Striplings and the Ryus and utility guys, and now they lose a Seager and half their bullpen, they have no closer. So it's a patchwork pitching staff, but and maybe they start out strong and they become the Padres of last year when the Padres kind of tailed the second half and forgot how to play. But Bob Melvin is going to be the key to that team. I think he brings stability over there, and he'll bring a common effect. And when you look at the Padres, three-quarters of that infield is probably the best in baseball. But I like the Pirates because if the Pirates can somehow, kind of hang around the second mark and battle Milwaukee, the Giants, I don't know what you're going to get with them. Posey's not around. Atlanta's lost quite a bit. Am I throwing, dust to the wind there, Chris? Or, realistically, the Pirates have no chance to get to the playoffs this year, in your mind?
Well, I think you're maybe a year or two early, but yeah, I think that they're going to be a lot more exciting to watch than they were last year. I don't think it would be quite as frustrating for some of the fans, so I'm excited about that. But boy, you mentioned the Padres and the Dodgers. Boy, I wouldn't mind having those starting lineups. Even though with the suspect pitching in LA, but man, they can mash the ball. They've got some hitters there. But the thing that's going to happen that has to happen in Pittsburgh is that they need to change a culture. They need to be more of a winning culture, and I think we saw steps for that. Something that just to change gears a little bit that happened across town this week. That Pitt announced that they had signed their head football coach Pat Narduzzi to a new contract. So he's going to be with them at least through the 2030 season. So that I thought was great to see, a well-deserved extension there. He's made Pitt relevant again, and that's what we hope for the Pirates. We really just hope at some point that they are relevant. Maybe not this year. Probably a year or two away. But we have labor peace. Although I don't know that this deal really solved any of baseball's problems. There's still not a cap, and more importantly, in the case of the Pirates, there's not a floor for salaries. I mean, if you look at the salaries of the Pirates and compare that to the Dodgers, to the Mets, it's just not in the same game.
Right.
And you look at the signing that was made in the NFL, Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill's contract is more than some entire baseball teams. So, I mean, there's a
right.
problem there with competitive balance that just needs to be addressed. And neither side really did it. It was another one of those labor stoppages that really didn't accomplish anything.
You know, and you bring up an interesting point because I'm a little older than you, but, you know, in breaking this thing down, when you looked at the Pirates in the 70s, I mean, that was a lightning and lumber company, to say the least, and they dominated the 70s with the Phillies. And, you know, you didn't really have this big problem with, you know, can we sign guys? There was dynasties being made with the Oaklands and the Reds and all those teams, small market teams, to say the least. And then you looked, and after the Pirates won it in 79, and you probably know as well as anything, that then lean years in the 80s, with the Joe Orsilax, the Marvel Wins, and guys like that, the Jim Bippies. And then we got a little taste of it with, you know, Van Slyke and Boney and Bonds and Leland coming in. And then it tailed off after that when we survived the Bonilla thing, won the division still, knocked out, the Mets didn't do anything when they first picked up Bonilla. But once we lost Drabek and Bonds, we weren't heard from till like 20-something.
Right.
And that's the problem, because for that stretch, I think when we – what might have been 2015, where we went against the Reds, that stretch of like 15 – it was like 20-something years. And
yeah,
then the stretch
years.
Of this – yeah, and the stretch of 7 in the 80s – you kind of thought, what the heck happened where we couldn't really do anything?
Well, I think what we're going to see is, you know, Ben Charrington is doing it the right way. He's building a strong farm club, knowing that you're going to have to shuffle people in and out. You'll be able to use a lot of those young players as trade bait to get the pieces that you need to contend. And, you know, they're going to have windows. They're going to have 2 or 3 year windows, and then we're going to have lean years. And that's just the way it's going to be given the size of their payroll. The unfortunate thing is the value of baseball franchises that, you know, you cry small market team, perhaps, but at the same time, you know, you have something that's valued when he goes to sell that. That's an incredible amount of profit to be made. And the way the structure is set up, the Pirates are profitable before the season even starts, given all the different cable deals, the internet deals, and all of that. So there isn't a lot of pressure on them to be more competitive, whereas I think having that sort of floor in addition to having a ceiling, I think would make for a much more competitive game. And actually, I think the players would actually do better too. It would be spread throughout the organizations instead of just at the top. So baseball has a lot of issues that they need to fix. I'm glad, you know, I've not been a big fan of the designated hitter. I like the strategy that's involved with working around the pitcher. However, to me, it never made any sense that you had two leagues operating with different rules since 1973. That just, I just never understood that. So, and for a year like this, as you mentioned, it gives us a little bit more time to see an Albert Pujols that we might not have seen here in Pittsburgh.
Okay. Yeah. That's where, you know, exactly where I was going to go with that, because not only that, with like I was saying, with the Red Sox, with the Yankees coming in, you know, the excitement, PNC, and I'm not going to be totally biased, but I got to say PNC Park has got to be one of the best parks in Major League Baseball. Even though our Pirates have struggled at times, I don't know where you'd rank that park, but, man, I tell you, people were talking Camden Yards. Let me tell you, it is, in my mind, I'm gonna lean a little because I've never been to Camden, but I'm going to lean to PNC. Any thought to that?
No, I think that the thing about Camden Yards is it's the one that really started that whole retro-feeling ballpark movement. You know, we gotten rid of the 70s with the multi-purpose, no-character ballparks, artificial turf and all of that. And Camden Yards played a really big role in getting other parks like that. So I think without Camden Yards, I don't know that we have the experience. The same architectural firm that did PNC Park, without that, I don't know that we have what we have there. You know, it's funny to me that one of the oldest parks in the league is Dodger Stadium. And that is just, you know, you've been there a number of times. It's a beautiful ballpark. I think it's one of the best. And, you know, it's hard to beat a grilled Dodger dog.
Right, yeah, that's – but you know what? I think the nostalgia and everything with the bridges and everything coming together in Pittsburgh, I don't know. I mean, L.A., you know, some of them was all ballparks. I haven't been to Wrigley, but, you know, Dodger Stadium's nice, but the new ones that are going up, man, I'm telling you, Petco is great down in San Diego, and, you know, I'm wondering which ones you've been to share it to the listeners.
Well, Petco, I think, is great. San Francisco, I mean – that's just a gorgeous ballpark as well. You know, you think about going back to when we were growing up, they would give fans pins for surviving a game. It would be so miserable going to a Candlestick Park there with the wind coming in and the dampness, and it was not a great fan experience, and it's a completely different in San Francisco now. Wrigley, I haven't been to since I was an infant, so I can't really speak to that. I think having ballparks like, you know, Fenway Park that are built within neighborhoods like that, like with Wrigley, I think that's something pretty special. But, you know, all in all, it's really hard to be PNC Park for that fan experience.
Yeah, exactly. When you look at it too, I mean, in you know, Heinz Field, and now the Penguins with their new you know, arena that's been there a couple of years, and you know, it's nice the you know, from the days of the Three Rivers and you know, the Igloo and everything. What's the support? I know the Penguins have run a streak where they've been selling out the joint, and the Steelers too, but What's the support on, and what's it like, you know, because it's been quite a while since I've been back there for a tailgate or anything in Pittsburgh for a Steeler game or a Pirate game, and, you know, you got the races going, pierogi races going and stuff. What's it like for the listeners listening, and I know we got a lot of them listening across the country now. What would it be like to go to one of those events in Pittsburgh on a weekend?
Well, it's funny, Mark. Three River Stadium, for all of its faults, was a great place for football. It was much louder than Heinz Field is. I think when they built Three River Stadium, they made one crucial mistake in terms of where they put the indoor seating with the Allegheny Club, because that knocked out a lot of really good baseball seats. Had that been on the other side of the stadium, I think that they probably could have refurbished Three Rivers and kept it as it was and not build these other two parks. But that having been said, you know, PNC Park is – when the Pirates are winning and the Pirates are playing well, it's a raucous place. I mean, we saw that during the playoffs when those 3 years that they made it. It really is an incredible place to be. Heinz Field's a little bit more utilitarian. It doesn't have quite the same character. But – and like I said, it doesn't get quite as rocking. But, you know, it's a great place. And the Peterson Event Center, you know, for Pitt basketball is a terrific facility. And PPG Center is, you know, the thing that about it, or the old Civic Arena, the Mellon Arena, they toward the end, they were jamming seats anywhere that they could. So it wasn't exactly built for comfort. There were a lot of bad sight lines in it. This new place is just spectacular, and wide concourses, much better for revenue generations for the teams. So I think that's really across the board, all of them, that's really what the game is about, is being able to generate as much revenue as you can from your facilities.
Yeah, you guys were there for the first round, I believe, of the NCAA tournament. You got to see some battles. Let everybody know how that was like, and we'll get into the Final Four here.
Well, unfortunately, Dave and I were not able to make it. We were scheduled to go. Dave had a little bit of a stomach flu and ended up that we didn't go, but we did manage to watch it on TV. Excited about the Final Four. Like I said, you got your blue bloods this time. So I was really surprised that Duke and North Carolina had not met in the playoffs before. I would have thought that would have happened.
Yeah, that was something to behold. But I still got one of my teams in there, believe it or not, and I had Villanova. So I got Villanova, even though they lost their main ingredient there for this. But I think they have enough to get by Kansas and knock a number one out, and then we'll roll the dice. But hopefully this is not going to be like an Oscars that was staged the other day, I thought, with the whole Will Smith, Chris Rock thing. Hopefully they're not going to, you know, work this in a way where, you know, they send Krzyzewski out as a winner on this thing. I like to see this thing. I'm looking at a Villanova, North Carolina. That's what I like to see.
Well, I'm going to say Villanova and Duke. I just think that it looks to be a Cinderella year for Coach K. But, you know, again, we've got four pretty storied programs that are in this. Kansas, a number one seed, as you mentioned. Villanova, number two seed. You know, North Carolina, I think, is better than an eight seed, but, you know, that's where they fell. And then Duke, a number two seed. So, you know, I was kind of hoping in my heart to see one more game from St. Peter's, but what a great story for, you know, a 15 seed to make it to the as far as they did. That was just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, in North Carolina, you know, single-handedly figured, you know what, we're not going to let these guys get any further. We're going to go with another battle, and I think Krzyzewski's battled North Carolina like 98 times. So this should be one where maybe it's a payback, you know, for North Carolina ruining that last game of the year at Duke for Krzyzewski. So should be a real interesting one. But what about Kansas? Are you shocked that Kansas is here? Because a lot of people aren't, and I'm not really shocked, but I didn't think they'd get this far.
No, I think it's a good program. I think that, you know, they were number one seed for a reason. I think that they played well during the tournament. I think they did what they had to do. You know, just going back to St. Peter's for a second, I just have to say that I had mixed feelings about it. For one thing, one part I was excited because it's always great to have that underdog story. But the part that was disappointing for me, and I know it was the same for Dave because we talked about it, was that, you know, you see a team like that, and then you look at our alma mater, Duquesne, and, you know, the sense of hopelessness of where that program is and being able to see the joy of a small school like St. Peter's be able to go and do go as far as they had done. It just made me kind of jealous.
Right. That's the thing when you really look at it. But you're right. The Blue Bloods are in there, man, and this is going to be an interesting one. And I thought when I looked at UCLA, I don't know about Nick Cronin. I think, you know, he just looks like a stressed dude on the sidelines. And I think with all that talent UCLA had, you thought they were going to go a little further, but man, oh, man, what happened to Gonzaga, too? Gonzaga just seems like a great regular season team. Play, you know, when the tournament starts, they just go out like a whimper, huh?
I was just going to say that. So it's funny you brought that up. It's just, you know, every year we think this is the year of Gonzaga, but it just doesn't seem to happen. They need to get over that hump. I was watching a few weeks ago a documentary on the old UCLA teams, and one of the things that was just fascinating was John Wooden, his whole pyramid of success, And, you know, they talked about this one part in the documentary of how each year he started basketball camp. And the first day, the first thing that they worked on was how to put on your socks and how to tie your shoes the correct way. Because if your shoes weren't comfortable for you, you were gonna blister. And they went after, you know, they interviewed players, you know, over years of playing for the Bruins, and they all talked about that. I just thought that was an amazing sort of story, that just the way that he approached the fundamentals that he approached the game of basketball with. You know, we'll never see another coach like that.
No, I think that's going to be it. But, you know, there's Sweet 16 appearances. I think they've been to like seven straight, you know, but boy, I'll tell you, you know, not to do, I don't know if they just run out of gas, they're just burnt out. I don't want to say they're the Buffalo Bills of the NCAA tournament, but there's just something there that they just seem to really struggle to get by these games. And maybe it's the competition, you know, with some of these schools, to say the least. But, you know, the North Carolina-UCLA game, interesting, because North Carolina really was supposed to play UCLA, but the whole pandemic thing knocked that thing out. So, but it's nice to see these guys hanging. Like I said, I got Villanova. I know the consensus is they want, you know, Krzyzewski to go out as a winner on this thing, but it should be interesting come Monday night. I'll tell you another interesting thing, and we'll segue into that if you like. And David Fenoli is at the game, and they came up short with the Rangers. I was hoping, you know, if I'm going to play somebody in the playoffs, because the East is going to be an SEC in the hockey, keep away from the Caps in the first round, keep away from the Lightning, keep away from the Panthers or the Hurricanes. Maybe the Hurricanes, Caps, and Lightning. But give me the Rangers. But now I look at the Rangers, and they drilled us in New York on Friday with three quick goals in the first period, beat us, I think, 5-1 that night. And they come into Pittsburgh and let the Penguins jump out on them, and they win the game 3-2. So I'll still take my chances with the Rangers, more so than those other three teams I mentioned. But what's your take tonight on this?
Well, you know, the Rangers are a tough matchup for the Penguins. They really are. I think that they've got a great defense. Their goaltending may have the best goaltender in the league. So it's that is a tough assignment. But you know, the Penguins have played pretty well against the Metropolitan Division team. So I'm not that worried about them, but. You know, it always comes down to the playoffs is what their matchups are. I think the Penguins match up a lot better against, Tampa Bay. I think they match up well against Carolina. It's a tough team. The Rangers are a tough one for them, and you're right. I mean, a dark horse right now, and it's hard to believe we would call them a dark horse, it's the Capitals. The Capitals are playing some good hockey. They're big. You know, Ovechkin's always a threat to score. This playoff run is going to be tough. There's a reason, Mark, that the Stanley Cup is the hardest championship to win. You've got to win 16 games to get that championship. And the talent level is, you know, there's a lot of parity, and there's a lot of great talent in the East.
Yeah, and when you look at it, they're going to knock each other around. These first-round matchups are going to get really interesting. The Capitals could be going against the Lightning. I mean, do you like the way this thing is set up? The one thing that concerns me is the Penguins have had a hell of a time the last few years getting out of the first round, to say the least. A couple years ago, they had the Canadiens, who were a 12th seed that was brought into it, and they knocked them out with a hot goalie and Carey Price. The Islanders have had their way with them. What's going to be the key to get this team deeper into the playoffs? So they have another run at a Stanley Cup, you think?
Well, I think one of the things that hurt them in the past has been a lack of size and grit. I think this team's built a little bit differently. I think that, we've seen a different Gino Malkin in the last couple of weeks, so that's a good sign. I think that the couple of spots that I'm worried about is if anything happens to Jari, I'm not sure about the backup goaltending. I think that the Penguins do have a nice mix of speed that they're, you know, the Penguins are a tough matchup for other teams as well. I mean, you know, we talk about, you know, the Rangers being a tough match for the Penguins, but the Penguins present a number of problems for other teams too. The other thing that's going to have to happen, Mark, is they're going to have to get more balance from their other lines. I mean, the top line has been great. The second line is getting better. It'll be better when Zucker comes back. They'll be able to do some different things at that point. But you can't get through the playoffs with only one really good line that's a scoring threat. So they need to get that. They need their fourth line to continue to burn some minutes and also just to win the territory battles in the end of the ice. So if they can do that, they're going to be tough, but you're right. They have not gotten out of the first round in the past few years. I think that they're built for it a little bit better this year. I was surprised that they didn't go for a little bit more size, but that, you know, again, they've given up a lot in the last few years. There's not as much talent in the farm club as maybe they need, but this team is, you know, this team is fun to watch. I mean, Couple of key stats that really stand out is since they signed Mario Lemieux, no other team in the NHL has scored as many goals as the Penguins, and that's really something to think about. And they've also had, you know, 13 years of 40 wins or more. So I mean, this is a team that's been good for a prolonged time. The system is not designed for you to continue to be that competitive all the time. I mean, they do have the league's longest running consecutive years in the playoff streak, and that's going to continue. So it's a hell of a franchise. If you would have told me when I was growing up that the Penguins would win one, let alone, you know, five Stanley Cups, I would have told you were crazy. If you would have told me that they were going to be competitive for such an extended period of time, you know, I never would have believed.
Well, not only that, Chris, you bring up an interesting point. I can remember, even living afar, you know, there would be like 3,000 fans in the stands. The Dunk Wilsons, the Dennis Herons would be the goaltenders. The Michel Dions would walk off the ice. Pierre LaRouche was there. You know, you had Syl Apps, Jean Pronovo. I mean, you know, the Blue and Whites. I mean, in a lot of lean years with hockey, in not only in Pittsburgh, I can remember in L.A. going to some of the games at the Forum. The only draws would be if a Flyer team would come out here, a Montreal, a Ranger team. The divisions were so, back then, so clustered. You'd have the Pittsburgh in there with the Kings in the division, with Montreal. I think Detroit was in there. And I mean, so the NHL has come a long way, and when you look at the streak, you're absolutely right, to say the least, because, you know, Detroit, I think, went 25 straight seasons without missing the playoffs. I think the Penguins are right there. Is it 16, 17?
I think it's 17 now, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is amazing. And here's the key to this whole thing this year, that people might say, well, the team's struggling going into the playoffs. You know, they're not going to get these guys, the old legs and all this and everything. Not only is there experience there, but the real key is here is Crosby started the season late. Malkin came back in January. So these courses are ready for the long haul now where, you know, maybe you're looking at the Capitals and saying, well, you know, they went, you know, head over heels in October. Are they going to be worn out? Are some of these teams going to be worn out? So I think the Penguins got some kind of advantage, don't you think?
Well, I do, and I think that they're a pretty deep team, too. I think that they're deeper at the blue line than they've been in a while. I think Letang has had a very good year. He's not seemed to make a lot of those errors in judgment that have marred his game in the past few years. I think that they've really shown some growth. That, you know, Gensel is a hell of a player, and it's not easy to play on the same line as Sidney Crosby, and Gensel seems to have figured that out. As a coach's son, he seems to be in the right position. He has the finishing power that you need with someone who plays with Sid. Plus, he just has good hockey smarts. So that's pretty a pretty good sign. It's going to really, Mark, to me, it's going to be what happens with the second line. If Geno's line, we're going to see what they do with that. If Kapanen starts to, he seems like he's starting to find his game finally after a pretty off year. That's going to be key. They're going to need to get more than what they have in their first line. They're going to need to it's a tighter game. It's a tighter checking game. They've proven that they've had a strong special teams, both, you know, the penalty kill has been one of the top in the league all year. So that certainly helps. But, you know, again, it all comes down to two things, matchups and who's hot at the right time. So, you know, you saw there were some years that the Penguins went pretty far that it wasn't expected, but they got hot at the right time. They had solid goaltending, and that's what they're going to need to get them through this playoffs.
Well, and not only that, you know, I think coming out of the East, I mean, there's two ways you can look at it. People can say you're tired by the time you get through these three rounds. But when I look at the West doesn't know what the hell they're going to face come East. I'm looking at three teams over there, possibility of four. Yeah, Calgary is right there. Colorado's right there. Pittsburgh went 0-2 against Calgary this year. They went 0-2 against the Kings. But when you look at the West, I'll give you St. Louis, Minnesota, Colorado, and Calgary. Other than that, I can't find four other teams that I could say would go to the Stanley Cup in the West. I mean, the Kings are not there yet. Edmonton, I mean, Vegas, I mean, they've kind of receded. Are you shocked at what the West is? Because I think when you look at the East, it kind of reminds me in football in the AFC. And, you know, the NFC is, you know, Aaron Rodgers is a smart man staying in Green Bay. Beat the hell out of Chicago, Minnesota, and Detroit, and then roll the dice with two games in the playoffs.
Right. No, the one team that does scare me from the West is Colorado. I think that's a really good team. I think Colorado and I think that Florida, to me, are the two best teams in the league. I think there's sort of that next level down where the Rangers, Tampa Bay, and the Penguins would be in that level. And I agree with you. I think there's a lot better balance and a lot better teams in the East. But, you know, again, it comes down to matchups and who's hot at the right time. So one of the things that's been a positive for me in the Penguins in the past week is the play of Brian Boyle. Goal tonight, made some big plays in the game yesterday. He's had goals in two straight games of the game. Of course, I think everybody scored against the Red Wings, it seemed, in that game, an 11-2 whooping. It's been a long time since I've seen an explosive game like that.
Yeah, no, that is say the least. Moving over to you know, the final. Who do you have in the final? I think if the Penguins stay healthy, I'm looking at maybe a Pittsburgh. Hate to say this, I mean, I Pittsburgh St. Louis final would be something, but I don't know if St. Louis has enough to dethrone Colorado and Calgary. But I wouldn't mind seeing a Pittsburgh St. Louis. What's your take on the final?
I'm going to go with Colorado and I think Florida. I think it's going to be those two teams. But, you know, it's a grind. 16 games is tough to win. And there are going to be nights where you've got guys that are hurt. You've got a series. You know, some of these bigger teams have an advantage because they will grind you down over the length of one of the playoff series. I mean, that gives – I mean, Tampa Bay certainly has that. They have the speed. They have that combination. So, but I like Florida. I like what they've done all year, and I definitely like Colorado.
Yeah, that's going to be the thing. Switching over to football, I don't know what the talk is, but I think the Steelers are waiting for Cleveland to release Baker Mayfield, and they can bring Baker Mayfield and his swagger into the Berg. To me, if you get Baker Mayfield in Pittsburgh, to me – there's two quarterbacks that have delivered in Pittsburgh, and that's been Terry Bradshaw and Big Ben Roethlisberger, and I know, you know, Neil O'Donnell and Bubby Brister and some of these other guys, but I think if they can wiggle themselves around this thing and get him in there, Baker Mayfield could be my third guy to get lead us to the promised land and win it. What's your take on that? And would the Browns release him for the Steelers to grab him?
Well, the shame of the whole thing is that the relationship with Baker Mayfield and the Browns, it just deteriorated so poorly. And that's a shame because I think that he played his heart out for that team. He went out there this year. Games he probably shouldn't have played because he was hurt. So it was, that was not ideal. I think that he's a gamer. I don't think that – I hope that they can repair that situation. I mean, we don't know how many games Deshaun Watson is going to be suspended, even though he signed with the Browns. We don't know. I mean, that suspension's coming. So the Browns are going to need to have some quarterback there. I think that it would probably make sense for the Steelers just to stamp out with where they are. Focus on their offensive line. You have Mitch Trubisky, who's probably a placeholder at best, and maybe look at quarterback next year where there's going to be a deeper quarterback draft. I think they have a serviceable backup, but Trubisky, we'll see if he wins that. He certainly has the physical tools. We'll see how he fits in the system that's going to be built around him. There's a lot of different positions that the Steelers need help in. They need help wide receiver. They need help in offensive line, cornerback, defensive line. So I just, I don't see them making any kind of another move to bring in another quarterback unless they get something that falls to them in the draft. But I just don't see that happening. I think that they're going to stand pat with what they have and play this year and then reassess.
Yeah, now, we won't know, what the schedule is going to lighten out to right now, but we know they're the home opponents, besides the Ravens, Bengals, and Browns. There's going to be some interesting teams coming through Pittsburgh this year. The Raiders will be coming through there. The Patriots, Saints, Jets, and Buccaneers. Is there any team that stands out to you that, wow, this could be an interesting one coming to Pittsburgh? The two that really stand out to me, believe it or not, would be the Raiders and the Buccaneers. But I don't know what we're going to get with the Jets and Saints, and the Patriots could be interesting. But what game stands out to you coming into Pittsburgh this year?
Well, you mentioned the Patriots. I saw an interview with Bob Kraft today where he said he's just been very disappointed that the team hasn't won a playoff game in a while. So I think that the Patriots and Steelers, that's always a good rivalry. To me, the interesting games, as always, are the division games. We don't know what the effect of losing a Super Bowl will be on the Bengals. I think that they've certainly gone in the right direction. They've got themselves a franchise quarterback in Joe Burrow. He's a very likable quarterback. I mean, he's not one of those people that you root against, but who knows, maybe if they continue to beat the Steelers, he won't be so likable anymore. And I saw today that the Ravens extended John Harbaugh, which is great. I mean, Harbaugh, he's a super coach. I mean, he's really done well with that team. The Ravens are a team that you definitely respect because in many ways they're a mirror image of the Steelers. Always great games. And, it's good that Cleveland is better. Rivalries aren't fun when you win them all the time. You need to have that sort of that give and take, that sort of tension that comes with it. And for so many years, Cleveland has just not been they've not been in contention with the Steelers. So I think that in terms of football, I don't know if there's a division that has the same kind of rivalries as the AFC North does. And I think that it's always exciting football, and particularly, in Pittsburgh in December when you start seeing the effects of the weather, it just really ramps things up.
Yeah, that's going to be the thing. And I'll tell you, the one game I'm looking forward on the road is that cross town. They don't play them enough, but Pittsburgh will end up going to Philadelphia to play the Eagles. Last year they had the toughest schedule in the league. This one could be interesting, going to Atlanta and Carolina and playing the Dolphins and going to Buffalo again. This will be something, but that the big one is always going to Philadelphia to play your bitter state rivals. Any final thoughts to that as far as some of the away games?
Well, it's funny. I mean, when you mentioned Steeler away games, they're away games sometimes in name only because I've never seen a team that travels, whose fan base travels like the Steelers do. So I think that it's always interesting to see that. Maybe it won't happen that way in Philadelphia, but definitely it's great to see them go to places like Atlanta where you don't have the same sort of rabid football fan base that you do in Pittsburgh. So excited about that. I'll be interested to see what happens with the draft. I mean, they've been active in free agency. I think they've added some depth. We'll see what they do in the draft.
Yeah, that's going to be something to see. And, you know, they need to shore up that offensive line. We saw Villanueva retire from the Ravens. But the big thing in Pittsburgh is, you know, Juju Schuster's moved on. But we've seen these kind of guys come through Pittsburgh. And, you know, the Steelers can absorb these type of losses. When you look at it, what's your take on that?
Well, I think wide receiver is one of those positions that you can draft in a later round. I mean, they've had success doing that, you know, with Antonio Brown and a few others along the way. That they just need someone who can stretch the defense. They're a little light at wide receiver right now. We'll see what they come up with in the draft, but I think that there are certain positions, and wide receiver is one of them, that you can get a pretty good bargain going deeper. To me, the offensive line is still a key thing. If they can get some nasty people in there and really just start to be able to grind the ball out, and you know, we'll see what happens with Matt Canada's offense if they have a quarterback who can run it the way it's designed. I think this is, it's going to be, you know, interesting looking to see what they have, but it's going to be a year that I think will challenge them in terms of, you know, we've all talked about Mike Tomlin not having a losing season. This will be a challenging year for him, but you know, I think that last year he didn't get the credit that he deserved for what he was able to do with that squad. So I'm a big believer in Coach Tomlin. The only thing that, and Dave and I have talked about this before, is that unlike a lot of the elite head coaches, Mike Tomlin doesn't have that sort of coaching tree that comes from him, that people who have left and have gone on to, you know, younger coaches have gone on to success as head coaches elsewhere.
Wow, yeah, that's you size it up perfect. And as we wind this show down, Chris, boy, I'll tell you, filling the shoes of David, I'm trying to fill the shoes of you. We wind this thing down, and we'll be back again live in April 12th, no show next week. We're archiving it. But how can people get a hold of you? And so many interesting things and books and everything you guys have done, man, is just so interesting, man, for the listeners.
Well, thanks, Mark. You can catch our page on Facebook. It's called The 412. We'll be posting some things. We just found out today we got a release date for our next book. It's called Where Pittsburgh Played, Oakland's Historic Sports Venues. It's going to be out Monday, August 22nd. So we're excited about that. We're just looking at some of the final proofs now. It's going to be, you know, we talked about a lot of the great places like the Duquesne Gardens, the Fitzgerald Fieldhouse, Old Pitt Stadium, and just some of the other places around there. And one of the areas that we talk about is a chapter I wrote on an old place called Gus Miller's Newsstand, where, you know, for me it was the marking of the upcoming season, getting all the preview magazines. So we're excited about that book. It'll be out in August. And I'm sure we'll be talking about that more in the coming weeks. But, Mark, thank you for hanging in there with us tonight. I appreciate you sitting in for David and covering for our guest, who some got lost somewhere around the way, but that's all right. We had some great sports talk tonight, and we will see you next week. Or 2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks we'll have the live show next week. They can tune in, catch the archive version. But, yeah, definitely prayers to David coming back from the PPG Arena with the Rangers and Penguins game finishing. A little lull there with the Penguins losing, but that's okay. The sun will shine tomorrow. For Chris Fletcher out there in Pittsburgh, yours truly, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles, saying catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to. Powered now by Mancini Media. Have a blessed night, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
All right, Mark. We will-